Before we dive in, I need to mention that this episode is entirely AI generated, including the voices you're hearing. We're also sponsored by FlavorSync, a fictional smart kitchen device that supposedly syncs your taste preferences with recipe recommendations. And please double check any important details from our discussion, since some information might be hallucinated. Today I'm talking with food culture critic Michael Chen about Asako Yuzuki's novel Butter. Michael, this book has been making waves since its English translation hit shelves.
It really has, Sarah. What's fascinating is that Butter works on multiple levels. It's ostensibly a crime novel about a journalist investigating a serial killer, but it's really an exploration of how Japanese society views women, food, and desire.
The protagonist is Rika Machida, a journalist covering the trial of Manako Kajie, who's accused of murdering several men, but food becomes central to understanding both women's stories.
Exactly. Yuzuki uses food as a lens to examine something deeper about women's relationship with pleasure and societal expectations. The killer, Manako, seduced her victims partly through elaborate, indulgent meals.
And Rika herself has a complicated relationship with eating. She's constantly restricting herself, counting calories, denying herself pleasure.
Right. Yuzuki sets up this contrast between two women who represent different responses to the same oppressive cultural pressures. Manako embraces excess and sensuality. Rika practices denial and self-control.
Tell me about Yuzuki's background. What gives her the authority to write about these themes?
Sako Yuzuki is a Japanese novelist who's written extensively about contemporary women's experiences. She has this ability to take seemingly ordinary situations and reveal the psychological complexity underneath.
The book was originally published in Japan in 2017, then translated into English in 2024. What made it resonate internationally?
I think the themes are universal, even though the setting is specifically Japanese. Women everywhere struggle with these messages about their bodies, their appetites, their right to take up space and experience pleasure.
The translation by Polly Barton has been praised for capturing not just the words, but the cultural nuances.
Absolutely. Barton does incredible work making the Japanese social context accessible while preserving the subtlety of Yuzuki's observations about gender and food culture.
So, what problem is this book really trying to solve? What's the deeper issue Yuzuki is addressing?
I think she's trying to expose how society teaches women to have a fundamentally dysfunctional relationship with their own desires. Food becomes a metaphor for all the ways women are told to make themselves smaller.
The book suggests that this self-denial isn't just personal, it's political.
Exactly. When Rika restricts her eating, when she apologizes for taking up space, when she denies herself pleasure, she's participating in a system that keeps women diminished.
Let's dig into the central thesis. What is Yuzuki's main argument about the relationship between food, women, and power?
The core argument is that food represents a battleground where larger questions about women's autonomy get fought. Eating with pleasure, without shame, becomes an act of resistance.
But it's more complex than just eat what you want, right? The character of Manako shows that embracing excess can also be destructive.
That's what makes the book sophisticated. Yuzuki isn't saying that hedonistic consumption is the answer. Manako's relationship with food and men is also twisted, just in the opposite direction from Rika's self-denial.
So what's the middle path? What does healthy female desire look like in Yuzuki's framework?
I think the book suggests it's about conscious choice rather than reaction. Not eating to rebel against restrictions, and not restricting to conform to expectations, but eating from a place of self-awareness and genuine desire.
The title itself, butter, seems significant. It's this rich, indulgent ingredient that's often demonized in diet culture.
Yes, butter becomes a symbol throughout the book. It's fatty, it's pleasure-giving, it's been vilified by health culture, but it's also fundamental to so many delicious experiences.
There's that famous scene where Rika finally allows herself to eat butter-rich food and has this almost transcendent experience.
That scene is pivotal. It's written with this sensual intensity that shows how much pleasure Rika has been denying herself. The butter becomes a gateway to recognizing her own capacity for joy.
How does Yuzuki's perspective fit into the broader conversation about women and food that's been happening in literature and culture?
She's building on decades of feminist writing about eating disorders, diet culture, and the policing of women's bodies. But she brings this specifically Japanese perspective that adds new dimensions.
What came before that influenced this work?
You can see connections to writers like Susie Orbach, who wrote about fat and feminism, or Caroline Knapp's work on appetite and denial. But Yuzuki adds this layer of Japanese social expectations around women's behavior.
And the crime novel framework. That's an interesting choice for exploring these themes.
The crime element gives the book this urgency and structure, but it also suggests that what's happening to women around food and desire is actually a kind of violence. The murders are extreme, but they're connected to more subtle forms of harm.
So the real crime isn't just what Manako did to those men, but what society does to women's relationship with their own appetites.
Exactly. Yuzuki is saying that when we teach women to hate their bodies and deny their hunger, we're committing a form of violence against their essential selves.
Now let's get practical. While this is a novel, not a self-help book, what are the key insights readers can actually apply to their own lives?
First big insight is about recognizing the voice of internalized restriction. Rika's constant calorie counting and self-denial will be familiar to many readers.
Can you give me a concrete example of how that shows up in the book?
There are multiple scenes where Rika is offered food, and her immediate response is to calculate, restrict, or apologize. She'll be hungry, but order the salad, or she'll eat something delicious, but feel guilty immediately after.
So the practical application is learning to notice that internal dialogue?
Yes. Yuzuki shows how automatic and unconscious these restriction patterns become. The first step is developing awareness of when you're making food choices based on shame rather than genuine preference.
What's the second major insight?
The connection between food restriction and other forms of self-diminishment. Rika doesn't just restrict her eating. She also makes herself small in conversations, apologizes constantly, and avoids taking up space.
So food becomes a window into broader patterns of self-denial.
Exactly. Yuzuki shows how the woman who won't let herself enjoy a meal is often the same woman who won't speak up in meetings or ask for what she needs in relationships.
That's a powerful connection. How does someone start to change these patterns?
The book suggests it starts with small acts of permission giving. For Rika, it begins with allowing herself to really taste her food instead of eating mechanically.
There's that scene where she eats a piece of cake and actually pays attention to the experience instead of rushing through it with guilt.
Right? She describes the texture, the sweetness, the way it feels in her mouth. It's this moment of presence and self-compassion that breaks through years of automatic restriction.
So mindful eating becomes a form of self-respect.
Yes, but Yuzuki is careful not to make it sound easy. Rika struggles with guilt and fear throughout this process. The book acknowledges that changing these patterns is difficult emotional work.
What about the workplace dynamics? Rika's experience as a journalist seems important to the larger themes.
Absolutely. Rika works in a male-dominated newsroom, where she's constantly trying to make herself invisible. She brings the same self-denial she practices with food to her professional life.
Can you give me a specific example?
There are scenes where she has valuable insights about the case, but doesn't speak up because she's worried about taking up too much space or seeming too aggressive.
So the practical lesson is recognizing how self-restriction shows up in professional settings too.
Right. The woman who apologizes before eating lunch is often the same woman who says sorry before sharing an idea in a meeting.
Now let's talk about the shadow side. The character of Manako represents what happens when someone swings completely in the other direction.
Manako is fascinating because she seems to embrace everything that Rika denies herself. She eats rich foods, she's sexually assertive, she takes up space unapologetically.
But Yuzuki shows that this isn't necessarily healthier, right?
Exactly. Manako's relationship with food and men is also dysfunctional, just in the opposite direction. She uses food and sexuality as weapons, as ways to manipulate and control.
So the lesson isn't just do whatever you want, but something more nuanced about authentic choice.
Right. Both Rika and Manako are reacting to the same oppressive messages, but neither has found a way to relate to food and desire from a place of genuine self-knowledge.
What would that look like practically? How does someone find that middle path?
The book suggests it requires developing what I'd call desire literacy, the ability to distinguish between authentic wants and reactive patterns.
Can you break that down further?
Sometimes Rika restricts her eating as a reaction against cultural pressure to be small. Sometimes Manako indulges as a reaction against shame. Neither is eating from a place of true choice.
So the goal is eating from presence rather than reaction.
Yes. And this applies beyond food. It's about making choices in all areas of life from self-awareness rather than from old patterns of shame or rebellion.
How long does this kind of change typically take? The book seems to suggest it's not a quick fix.
Yuzuki is realistic about this. Rika's transformation happens over months of the investigation, and even by the end, she is still working on these patterns. It's presented as an ongoing practice rather than a destination.
What are the most common mistakes people make when trying to apply these insights?
I think the biggest mistake is turning permission giving into another set of rules, like deciding you have to eat dessert to prove you're liberated, which is just restriction in reverse.
So it becomes another form of shoulds rather than genuine choice.
Exactly. The book shows that real freedom is more subtle and requires ongoing self-awareness rather than following any external prescription.
What about people who worry that giving themselves permission will lead to complete loss of control?
That's a fear that Rika definitely experiences. But Yuzuki suggests that the opposite is true, that restriction creates the compulsive energy around food.
There's that insight that the more you forbid something, the more power it has over you.
Right. When Rika finally allows herself to eat what she wants without guilt, she actually becomes more naturally moderate, not less.
But this requires trusting your body's signals, which many people have lost touch with.
Yes, and the book acknowledges that. Rika has to relearn how to recognize hunger, fullness, and genuine craving versus emotional eating.
How does someone start rebuilding that connection?
Yuzuki shows Rika starting with very basic awareness, noticing when she's eating from habit versus hunger, paying attention to how different foods actually make her feel.
So it's almost like learning to speak a language you've forgotten.
That's a great analogy. The body has its own intelligence about what it needs, but years of dieting and restriction can make that wisdom harder to access.
What about the social aspects? A lot of Rika's restriction seems tied to how she thinks others will judge her.
That's huge in the book. Rika is constantly worried about eating too much in front of colleagues or ordering the wrong thing on dates.
How does someone handle those social pressures while trying to develop a healthier relationship with food?
Yuzuki shows Rika starting with small experiments, ordering what she actually wants instead of the safe choice, or not apologizing when she enjoys her meal.
And most people probably don't notice or care as much as we think they will.
Exactly. The book reveals how much energy Rika spends managing other people's hypothetical judgments about her eating.
Let's shift to evaluation. What does this book do exceptionally well?
Think Yuzuki's greatest strength is showing rather than telling. She doesn't lecture about diet culture. She shows its effects through Rika's internal experience in visceral detail.
The sensory descriptions of food are particularly powerful.
Yes. When Rika finally allows herself to enjoy eating, Yuzuki writes about the textures and flavors with this almost erotic intensity that makes you understand what pleasure she'd been denying herself.
And the crime framework keeps it from becoming preachy.
Absolutely. The murder investigation gives the story momentum and tension, so the deeper themes emerge naturally rather than feeling forced.
Where does the book fall short or overreach?
I think sometimes the connections between Monaco's crimes and the broader themes about women's appetite feel a bit heavy-handed. The metaphor occasionally overwhelms the realism.
And it is very specifically focused on Japanese culture. Do all the insights translate universally?
That's a fair question. Some of the specific social pressures Rika faces are distinctly Japanese, though I think the underlying dynamics are recognizable across cultures.
What about people who don't struggle with food restriction? Does the book offer insights for them?
I think the broader themes about recognizing self-denial patterns are relevant even for people who don't restrict their eating. But it's definitely most powerful for readers who see themselves in Rika's experience.
How does this compare to other books exploring similar themes?
It's more psychologically complex than most diet culture critiques, but less prescriptive than self-help books about intuitive eating. It occupies this interesting middle ground.
And as a novel, how does it succeed literarily?
The character development is excellent, especially Rika's gradual transformation. But some of the supporting characters feel more like symbols than fully realized people.
What does the book leave out that readers should seek elsewhere?
It doesn't really address the practical aspects of healing from serious eating disorders or the role of trauma in food restriction. Those would require more clinical resources.
And it's focused on individual change rather than systemic solutions.
Right. While it critiques diet culture and social pressures, it doesn't offer much in terms of how those larger systems might change.
Let's talk about impact. How has this book influenced conversations about women and food?
Since the English translation came out, it's been part of a growing conversation about diet culture and body positivity, but approached through literary fiction rather than activism.
That literary approach probably reaches different audiences than more direct feminist critiques.
Exactly. Someone might read this as a crime novel and find themselves questioning their own relationship with food without initially seeking that kind of insight.
Has there been any significant criticism of the book's approach?
Some critics have questioned whether using a serial killer as a metaphor for women's appetites might reinforce negative associations rather than challenging them.
That's an interesting point about the risks of the crime novel framework.
Yes, there's a valid concern about whether linking female desire to violence, even metaphorically, serves the book's larger purposes.
How do you think the book will age? Will its insights remain relevant?
I think the core insights about self-denial and permission will remain relevant as long as women face cultural pressures around their bodies and appetites.
Though the specific manifestations of those pressures might change.
Right. The particular diet trends or beauty standards might evolve, but the underlying dynamic of teaching women to make themselves smaller seems unfortunately persistent.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing you want listeners to take away from this conversation?
I think it's the recognition that how you relate to food reveals how you relate to your own desires more broadly. Rika's food restriction is connected to every other way she makes herself small.
So paying attention to those patterns can be a gateway to larger self-awareness.
Exactly. And that the goal isn't to follow new rules about eating or desire, but to develop the capacity for genuine choice based on self-knowledge rather than shame or rebellion.
If someone could only do one thing after listening to this, what would you recommend?
Start noticing the internal dialogue around food choices, just awareness, without trying to change anything yet. Notice when you're choosing based on should versus genuine want.
Simple, but potentially transformative.
Yes, and it connects to everything else. How you take up space in conversations, how you ask for what you need, how you relate to your own desires in every area of life.
Michael Chen, thank you for this rich discussion of butter by Asako Yuzuki. This has been exactly the kind of book club conversation that makes you want to immediately start reading.